The wedding march has stopped. The congregation has taken their seats. The couple stands before me, looking at me expectantly. I open my little black book. Now, no one in the room knows it, but the outline of the wedding liturgy that we are about to follow is from the Anglican Form of Solemnization of Marriage, published in 1549. This 1549 ceremony is a copy of a wedding ritual created at Salisbury Cathedral in southwest England. And no one knows the original author. The ritual may be 1,000 years old. It may have come to the Salisbury Plain from northern France. Now, I especially like the part where in 1549, an Anglican priest would have said, "Marriage should not be taken in hand unadvisedly, lightly, or wantonly. To satisfy man's cardinal lusts and appetites, like brute beasties that have no understanding." Today, in Unitarian Universalist weddings, you never hear that part about cardinal lusts or brute beasties. We religious liberals have made a few changes.
Dearly beloved, we gather here to unite this couple in marriage, which is an institution founded in nature, guarded by the state, solemnized by the church, and made honorable by the faithful keeping of people in all ages, a source of joy to those who enter it, and greater good for common life. It is therefore not to be entered into unadvisedly or lightly, but discreetly, thoughtfully, and with reverence.
Looking at the couple's faces, I see smiles on their lips and beads of perspiration on their skin. Their eyes look out at me. They're serious and intense. The smell of roses fills the air. Now, about weddings, George Bernard Shaw wrote, "When two people are under the influence of the most violent, most insane, most elusive, and most transcendent of passions, they are required to swear that they will remain in that excited, abnormal, an exhausting condition continuously until death do they part."
We depart from our childhood homes, but we do not leave behind our desire for the caring and help of our parents. As the parents of this couple, will you promise your support of their new relationship?
Now, this is in place of that old question, who gives this woman to be married? The old question implied that the bride was the property of the father who was giving her to the groom. These days, we ask all the parents for their support and encouragement. I wonder how the parents feel. Are they happy about this marriage? Are they worried? Are they relieved? Are they sad? Are they angry? Perhaps I'll have a moment to speak with them about the ceremony, after the ceremony. I will say that they have wonderful children and that they have done their best as parents, which is all any of us can do. And if I can, I will ask them how they are feeling. I will try to show them that I am listening by reflecting their feelings back to them as a good therapist might. I wonder, what is going on inside them, behind their smiling faces?
Solemn words and symbolic acts are but the outward sign of what is meant here. A true marriage is a union of lives established in respect, love, and devotion. It is a dedication of one to the other and of both to the wider community of which our lives are a part.
I always encourage everyone in the wedding party to have a little to eat before the service, to have a little to drink, but to avoid alcohol at least until after the service. Also, it's not a good idea to hold your breath during the wedding service. Over the years, two people have fainted while I was conducting the ceremony. I wonder whether it's a good match. What did they say they did for a living? One's a psychologist and the other works for the CIA. Agatha Christie wrote, "An archaeologist is the best partner you can have. The older you get, the more interesting the archaeology is in you." She was actually married to an archaeologist.
I'm glad they did not select a passage from the prophet for the reading. Khalil Gibran wrote, "Drink not from one cup, eat not from the same loaf." If they're married, they're going to be drinking from the same cup and eating from the same loaf a lot. When I get to the place in the reading where Gibran says, "Stand together, yet not too near together," I feel like I'm officiating at a divorce. The reading they have picked is a long one from Ecclesiastes.
"For everything there is a season and a time for every matter under heaven. A time to be born and a time to die, a time to plant and a time to pluck up what is planted. A time to kill and a time to heal. A time to break down and a time to build up. A time to weep and a time to laugh. A time to mourn and a time to dance. A time to throw away stones and a time to gather stones together. A time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing. A time to seek and a time to lose. A time to keep and a time to throw away. A time to tear and a time to sow. A time to keep silence and a time to speak. A time for love and a time for hate. A time for war and a time for peace. For everything there is a season and a time for every matter under heaven. Now is the time for a wedding."
It looks like they have both started breathing. This is a good sign. As I look into their faces and into their eyes, I wonder, do they know what it means to make a promise, a vow, a commitment to another person? Are they aware of the deeper significance of this ceremony? Do they understand the nature of this commitment? When we make a commitment to a friend, a partner, a lover, we make a promise, although we cannot predict what will happen. Does the couple before me understand this?
"Will you have this person to be your partner? Yes. To live together in the covenant of marriage? Will you love, comfort, honor, and keep your partner in sickness and in health, forsaking all others? Be faithful as long as you both shall live?"
What aspirations and apprehensions do each of them bring to this relationship? What energies and ability, what wants and imperfection move within their being? Do they know how to talk and listen? Can they express their feelings? Which is more important, their work or their relationship? Do they love their children? Can each of them change a diaper? Can each of them cook a meal? Is either of them preoccupied with status or with money or with possessions? Can they say the words, I love you? Are they patient with each other? Do they recognize that their partner is only an imperfect human being with strengths and with weaknesses? They look as if they are an authentic couple who can love deeply. They act as if they are capable of great tenderness. And they both appear to have a sense of humor. I wish them well.
Please face each other and join hands. Please repeat after me. I take you to be my partner in marriage, to have and to hold from this day forward, for better, for worse, for richer, for poorer, in sickness and in health, to love and cherish until we are parted by death. This is my solemn vow.
I'm a believer in marriage. I'm a believer in deep, strong, abiding commitment. Nevertheless, some of the weddings I officiate, in which I officiate, some of those will end in divorce. Now, there's a psychologist out in Seattle who claims that after listening to a couple talk to each other just for 5 minutes, he can predict with about 95% accuracy whether or not they will stay together. He doesn't get a lot of invitations to dinner parties. And I must say that when I meet with a couple, I cannot tell whether or not they will stay together. I wish I had magic words I could say, or a magic pill I could offer that would guarantee the success of a marriage of every couple whose wedding I officiate. Lacking such wizardry, I place my faith in the power of tradition, the promise of commitment, and if there is trouble down the line, the skill of an experienced therapist.
Bless this ring to be a sign of the vows by which these two people have bound themselves to each other. Please place this ring on your beloved's finger and repeat after me. I give you this ring as a symbol of my vow, and with all that I am and all that I have, I honor you.
The photographer, dressed in blue jeans and Nikes, is standing behind me, leaning over my shoulder, taking a picture of the exchange of rings. And in my imagination, I can hear myself saying, bless this photographer whose head I've just struck with this candlestick holder. The intrusive actions of some photographers most often detract from the sacrament of a wedding ritual. Behind the camera, some photographers think they are invisible. They appear to have no awareness of how their own presence influences the experience of this sacred ritual, this wedding. I'm sure they didn't have photographers back in 1549. But the best photographers understand that a wedding is a holy moment, a moment they should not disrupt with the movement, sound, and flash of a camera. They take pictures, but they do so at a distance with discretion. They respect me and my work, and in exchange, I respect them as creative artists. Their work can be beautiful, catching the expression on the couple's faces. catching a quiet moment as friends gather before the service, catching the image of tender hugs between the parents and the couple.
Now that you have given yourselves to each other by solemn vows, with the joining of hands and the giving and receiving of rings, by virtue of the authority vested in me by the state of Florida, I declare that you are married.
I look into their eyes again. I see the relief in the faces of the couple. Also, I can see that they're a little amazed that it happened so fast. Months of groundwork and planning for a 15-minute ceremony. I wonder, of all the events of today, what will they remember? The wedding dress, the food and the cake, the aroma and the color of the flowers, the joy and anxiety of greeting old friends and relatives, that bar in the stretch limo. Or will they remember best the wedding night, alone, holding each other, exploring each other's bodies as a married couple? I hope they will remember the promises they have made to each other. For a wedding is more than a carefully planned social event. It is more than an expensive party. It is a commitment to another person. It is a spiritual and a religious vow. For me, weddings are not routine. When I conduct a wedding ceremony, I feel an important duty and responsibility. It is not a show or a spectacle, but a sacred religious event, celebrating the promises two people make to each other. I pray in public and I pray in private for the success of their marriage. And I hope the significance of the ritual is also felt in the hearts of the congregation. When the bride and the groom are taking their commitment seriously, it is a profound honor to be part of such a holy occasion. Now we're almost done. For the closing blessing, they've chosen a reading commonly called the Apache Wedding Prayer. The words were actually written by a novelist named Elliot Arnold, who, as far as I know, is not Native American. They appeared in Arnold's 1947 novel, Blood Brother. And there's a place where he describes a wedding ceremony where two people cut their fingers and merge their blood as part of the ceremony, something that I have never done in a ceremony. These words started to appear as the closing words in weddings after they were used in a 1950 movie called Broken Arrow. Now, the screenwriter who included the words in the movie was Albert Martz. Martz was one of the Hollywood Ten, jailed in 1950 for refusing to testify before Congress about involvement with the Communist Party. So instead of calling these words an Apache wedding prayer, perhaps the closing words should be called the Blacklisted Hollywood Writer's Wedding Prayer. Nevertheless, they are wonderful words to conclude a wedding ceremony.
Now you will feel no rain, for each of you will be shelter to the other. Now you will feel no cold, for each of you will be warmth to the other. Now you will feel no loneliness, for each of you will be a companion to the other. Now you are two bodies, but there is only one life before you. Go now to your dwelling place to enter the days of your life together, and may your days be good and long upon the earth. Congratulations, you may kiss.
So I invite you all to kiss and sing our closing hymn, Let It Be a Dance.